This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Do you have a dark curiosity? Follow and listen to Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, my next guest, I'm really excited to interview because a few weeks ago, University of Minnesota Regent Steve Swigum created a firestorm when he asked his infamous question about too much diversity. Yes, too much diversity was causing a drop of enrollment on the Morris campus. Now, in the end, Regent Swigum decided to step down from his role. But the question remains, what does diversity do for a college campus? Again, that's what does diversity do for a college campus? To help provide some answers, we welcome Appalachian State University Vital Faculty Coordinator Lillian Nave. And she joins us via the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. Welcome, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us, Lillian Nave. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. It's lovely to talk to you.
You too. There's so much to talk about in this whole thing because I'm blown away at how in the world did we get to the point where we have to start discussing why there's just too much diversity on certain campuses. Because I remember when we started asking for more diversity, you know, people were saying that we have to get more diverse people on the campuses. We need more so that people can learn culturally from others. And I think that is still very important. How is it that we got here today now when someone can actually speak those words, yeah, we've got too much diversity?
I can't speak to how somebody might say that, but I could speak to the positives of why universities have been looking for diversity, because having more points of view, being able to disagree across difference, being able to have civil discussions, are all very important, and we hope to have better communicators, to have critical thinkers. Those are all of our, you know, general education goals, to help our students to be able to speak to others who are different than they are. And why is that important? Well, because in most areas of life, you will work and live with people who are different than you. And so having those skills and abilities to see somebody else who's different than you and be able to communicate and understand who they are is a really important part of life and life skills. So being able to learn some of those while you're in a college class from people who are different than you is a very positive experience.
I agree with that. The truth is that just bringing different students to a university does not magically make for a wonderful experience. And when I read this, I was really quite taken aback because the bottom line is that we are made to be diverse. You know, whether it's human beings, animals, you name it, our planet, our universe is diverse. And it drives me to the point of sadness when I hear someone say, oh, we have too much diversity on the campus. I just don't know how we got here. So then let's talk about where are we going with this type of statement leading the way.
Well, you know, I read about that particular statement, and it seems like there was a misattribution. So the idea was that some fellow colleagues or friends, the family, had students who just didn't feel like they would belong. And so they chose not to go to that university because they just didn't get the feeling that they might belong. And so the misattribution was, okay, maybe it's too diverse. Okay, so maybe there wasn't a space for these students who said they didn't feel like they had a place on campus. Now, I just think that's a misattribution. Not feeling like there's a place for you is very important, but I don't think that's causal, right? That is just because there's lots of different people there. And when you mentioned that just bringing diverse people into a campus, that doesn't solve the problem. I agree with you. In fact, I wrote on that recently, is that, yes, universities say, hey, we want lots of different students. In fact, all of our students are very different. And many of these differences we can't see. There are invisible differences, disability, neurodiversity, racial, ethnic, cultural backgrounds, college preparedness, first generation, working students, military veterans returning. There's lots of ways to be diverse. But how do we as universities, or how can we, make all of those students feel like they can be supported or feel like they belong? And that is a fundamental problem. We can't just bring students on and say, hey, we want a diverse student body. Look at our numbers. Look at this. Aren't we great? But then we don't provide ways for our students to feel like they belong on campus. I think that is a problem. So I do think it was a misattribution. Oh, it's too diverse. So that's not the problem. The problem is, how do we make sure that all of those very diverse students that we bring onto the college campus, because we see the benefits of diversity and how interesting and amazing every individual is, and that each one of these students deserves a chance to better themselves and learn. But how do we make the university a place that supports all of those students, no matter their ethnic and cultural background?
Right. You know, we were doing pretty well, though, over the last decades. I'd say the last 20 years, we've been doing pretty well, especially with affirmative action. And then there was this big blowout about affirmative action and wanting to get rid of it. And so here we are once again, looking at a way to say, what does diversity really mean on a campus? And I'd love to know how Appalachian State University, how do you see it? How do you see the diversity on your campus? And is it enough? Is it working?
Well, I think that that question of is it enough is kind of like the same thing as how do you say it's too much? What is enough and what is too much? I think I don't want to touch those, because who's the one to determine what's enough and what's too much, right? I don't think we can do that. At Appalachian and down south where we are in North Carolina, we call those mountains the Appalachian Mountains, and that's just a different culture. When I lived in New York, and in Pennsylvania, they call it Appalachian. But where we are, it's Appalachian. And we have a diverse student body. And we have a new, wonderful chief diversity officer who sees diversity with a broad lens. And not only does she bring diverse groups onto campus, and I think we're doing a good job, we're bringing a lot of students onto campus. We have a lot of students from all over the state and all over the nation who want to come to Appalachian. But she's also paying attention to, well, what happens when they're here? And how can we serve those students when they're on campus? So if you've got students who are first-generation college students and they have a job interview, but they've never put on a suit and tie, we've had sessions where we learn how to tie a tie. You know, that's a diversity issue too. It's not everybody knows the hidden curriculum about how to do college. We used to only have a small subset of very privileged students going to higher education. If we go back 50 years ago, in fact, women mostly weren't even allowed to go in higher education for most subjects, and so we've made huge changes. Anybody who would like to go to college can, for the most part. But what do we do once they are on campus to make sure that we're serving those students? I think that the university also has a duty to serve those students, not just to proudly proclaim that their numbers are great, because who decides what a great number is anyway? So I think a university really has to make a statement or a desire as to what's important and then support the things that are important to them by making the students who are on campus have a place to gather. So let's say we're a very veteran-friendly campus. So folks who are in the military and are returning to school. So we have a veteran center. We have specific classes. We have learning communities that help us serve those students. We have various, you know, ethnic and cultural identity centers. But we also have places and specific meetings and events where people can talk to each other and learn about each other across difference. And I think that's where we need to be going is, okay, yeah, people are different, but how do we really talk to each other? How do we understand each other? And we may not be able to sympathize with another student because we haven't had the same experience. We don't have the same background, but we should be able to learn to understand and empathize with someone else and say, you know what? That makes a lot of sense to you. That makes a lot of sense, understanding where you come from, why that's important to you, why that value is so important. I can understand why you think differently than I do, and I can respect that.
Well, there was a precursor. Excuse me for interrupting, yeah. Professor.
Sure.
But there was a precursor that led to this particular statement at the University of Minnesota Regent when that was spread around, right? So here it is for me. I think that diversity, equity, inclusion, or DEI, has attributed so much to making sure that corporations, I'm talking about the Fortune 50 companies, you know, that sort of thing, that all of these companies are really learning how important it is to have the DEI services. And here's the thing. I am shocked that we didn't deal with this a decade ago or two decades ago. But here we are now asking what does diversity do, or how does it what does it show about a campus? And that has been a real challenge for me to look at that and say, oh, I get it, because I don't get it. I don't know how we've gotten here. Look at some of the HBCUs, the historic black colleges and universities, right? You have also white students that are going to these universities. I remember there was a large group of Africans who came to the state of Minnesota and settled in a certain area, a certain suburb, and they were able to get into a lot of these HBCUs because they are Africans, first of all, right? And they would apply and get into these schools. And some people thought that was wrong to do. I don't have a problem with people. If you can get into the university, then get into it. And I started reading about Howard University, where our where Kamala Harris, our vice president, you know, she went there and they're getting much more money now. And of course, I read an article that said the white students need to be on these black campuses because they are the ones that are bringing in the money, where they're paying full tuition. And I got to tell you, that kind of burned me a little bit. What do you think of that statement?
Well, that often happens. I don't know specifically about Howard, but a university often will get a full tuition payment from an international student. Chinese and Indian students often are paying a lot to go to a Harvard, Yale, or Princeton, and they'll pay a full price so that maybe someone who can't pay is going for free. And that happens all over the place. Getting full tuition payers balances out the ability to hold spots open for those who do not pay, and also lessens the amount of loans that some students have to bear as well. So I'm not saying that's good or bad. I just know that it happens, and that's part of the funding model for most universities.
I can only imagine. And so now we're using the word belonging. I'd love to hear from you what belonging means to you, especially on the campus where you work.
Yeah. So the DEI, as you mentioned, has been very popular in the last, I'd say, decade, right? And the DEIB, the new letter, is what do we do once we get those students on campus? Because let's say we have 40% of our students are somehow diverse. They have some marker that makes them diverse, which you can kind of determine which ones those are. Is that a cultural or ethnic marker, race, or is it disability, whatever it is? Okay, but what happens then if 60% of those students, the ones that you're so proud of to have, don't finish? Are we really serving those students? Now they have loans. Now they have, they've spent several years at the university, but they don't have a degree and they've got loans to pay back. Did we really serve those students? And so that persistence, the completion to graduation is also very important. So not just, hey, we're going to get these students and that's going to make us look good because we like diversity. We want all these differences. But if we're teaching in the same way that excludes an amount of students all the time, or if we are creating an institution that excludes, whether it's socially or not providing spaces, a multicultural center, a disability center, a disability cultural center, neurodiversity, any number of the ways that other students can find people like them so that they are more likely to persist and finish their degree, then that's what that belonging is. Students need to feel like they can complete their studies, that they belong there, and that they have the support and the tools to do it. Not just, right. Okay, you get in, but we've got these weed out courses that are going to tell you if you can really hack it. And if you don't make it, then sorry. And that's a lot with designing better classes that reach all of our students, designing culturally inclusive classes. Mm-hmm. And we're starting to do that. It's kind of relatively new on the horizon, using universal design for learning, where we try to recognize and value the variability of learners and all the different ways they are different. That's wonderful. Then we're better able to serve our students. So it doesn't really help a campus to bring in a lot of students that fail. In fact, I think that really hurts the campus and it hurts those students especially.
I sure appreciate you joining us tonight. I really wanted to talk to you about universal design for learning a little more, but hopefully I can have you back on again, Professor. I'm so excited that you joined us tonight. Lillian Nave, Senior Lecturer and Vital Faculty. I've looked up Vital, which is Visiting Instructors, Temporary Adjunct, and Lecturers. So I was excited to have that. And I'm just really happy that we had a chance to talk about it. Say that again.
Well, thank you. That means all of those non-tenure track faculty. That's who I am and that's who I work with. Those that don't have that job security of tenure, which actually is now most of faculty in the United States. There are fewer tenure track lines and we have more of these adjuncts and tenuous workers. So it makes for a precarious position sometimes.
Yeah, my daughter has her PhD, and she really wanted a tenure track. And then with COVID and so much more, it just disappeared. It just disappeared.
It's near impossible.
Exactly. Well, I wish you well with all that you are working on at Appalachia, did you say?
Appalachian State, yep.
At Appalachian State. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right, take care.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Do you have a dark curiosity? Heart Starts Pounding, Horrors, Hauntings, and Mysteries is a weekly podcast hosted by me, Kaylin Moore. Each week, I'll take you on a dark journey through terrifying true urban legends, bizarre true crime cases, chilling tales of backwoods horror, and more. So if you're looking to join a passionate community of the darkly curious, check out Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. And remember, stay curious.